Welcome to the Monsters of Fantasy. This was written, produced, recorded, and edited by me, Sean McCarter. Monsters of Fantasy is a production in which I will explore the truly horrific side of the fantasy world known as Dungeons and Dragons. There are content warnings in the show notes below.
Episode 10, The Flesh Golem.
Sorry, everything for this was last minute and just thrust it upon me. I'd assumed that Daisy didn't want to pick an entry this month due to her brooding and general lack of enthusiasm. However, when I opened up my office this morning to record, I found this story wrapped around the notes and statements Nico left regarding the Flesh Golem. I had a note saying that this would be her entry for the Festival of the Dead. Story given by Maple, regarding Maple. My name is Maple, or that is the name I gave myself 14 years ago when I learned the language you refer to as Common Tongue. I have learned that humans do not remember the years shortly after their birth. But I was not birthed, I was created, and with that creation I remember everything. I awoke to the feeling of all my nerves coming alive at once. It was not a pain that I felt, but an electricity that spread from the base of my neck throughout the rest of my body, and as it passed through me, I became alive. In that sentience, I saw darkness, felt cold, and heard buzzing. I thrusted my eyes open and the blurry world around me started coming into focus. The buzzing in my ear faded away and was replaced by the distant sounds of rain hitting metal. My eyes focused on the swinging orb of light above me as a long tendril slowed its motion. It pointed the light, now blinding my just found sight. A dark shape hovered over my face, blacking out the light. Then a strong and harsh smell hit my nose. My first smell. The smell of burned wood. Melted metal, sulfur, and coffee. I tried feeling around, but my limbs and head were restrained and kept me lying down on this cold, hard surface. Instinctively, I rebelled against these restraints. The dark shape pulled back from my thrashing head. I felt my throat clench, and from inside my chest, a loud, audible groan escaped. Then all my senses stopped and became focused on one thing, a sound. A sound so rending and controlling that all the electricity stopped and focused on it. My true name. Coming from the dark shape above me, I couldn't understand the name, nor is it something I can remember. For whatever it was, this shape was saying made my entire body fall under his command. After a few moments, I felt the straps that were binding me release, and then he spoke again in a firm but comforting tone. He told me to rise, and I felt my torso bend itself forward. Not unwillingly, though. I had no concept of language. I had no concept of even what I was. But I knew that when the firm voice told me to rise, that I wanted, with all my being, to do as he said. I came face to face with my creator. He was a short, thin man who stood no taller than 5 feet. His skin was not wrinkled with age, but his hair was stark white, and despite it being curly, it stood up on end like the tops of a tree. He had wires of metal that contained glass that covered his eyes. Below the white bush of his upper lip was a big, twisted smile, revealing a row of yellowing teeth. He was wearing very dark clothing that even with the light that was hanging above me, it was hard to discern all the leather straps and metal clips that covered him. But what stood out for my head to process was the long bending metal shard that extended from his shoulder. It bended and hissed and whirled as he moved it around, and at the ends was a twitching and clenching fist. But it did not look like the fist attached to the end of my arm. My fist was made of flesh. I couldn't have had long to ponder those thoughts, for I didn't have the capacity then to think them. I hadn't yet learned how to form my own ideas, and it would be even later that I learned to speak them. At the time, I just let out a moan that made my ribcage rattle while I spasmed my legs. I think trying to throw them off the table, but I hadn't fully gained control of my legs yet. He laughed and warmly spoke to me. He spoke to me words that I did not understand, but would not forget. He spoke words that would mark what I think was my true sentience. No, not me being bound to this body, but me hearing words of love for the first time. Words of a father comforting his child that had just come into the world, who had no understanding of it. The words he spoke as warm liquid fell from his face and dripped onto me as he held me in a rocking embrace, repeating over and over, "My beautiful creation." The rest of my first night was spent with my creator testing what all I could do. He had me walk around his workshop, pacing back and forth till I got the use of my own legs. It wasn't long until he had me pushing and moving stuff. First, small items like rocks and pebbles, but he dared test my strength. He brought me to this big machine. It was a big cube that had branches and knobs at its base that he would pull down to make the machine light up. He was grinning and smiling, excitedly encouraging me to try and move the massive thing. My newly found muscle tendon strained as he had me press against the large and cold metal cube. And, after it shifted across the floor a few inches, he burst in excitement. I started to copy him, because he seemed happy. So I, too, started grunting and shouting while trying to smile like he was. I felt the grunts escape my throat, but when the sound passed my lips, it seemed I opened my mouth too far. I looked down, and my lower jaw was swinging from a thread, and my tongue sat dangling down my neck. Then the creator's face twisted. I did not understand him, but liquid was now coming out of his eyes, the same liquid at my birth just hours before. He placed his hand on me and calmed me down, even though I don't remember being that worried. Just confused at why I saw a piece of myself coming off of myself. That was the last of my training that night. He had me lie back on the table and spent a long time putting my face back together, as well as other things he referred to as enhancements. I don't know what it was he did, but I remember that throughout the night I would hear him talking quietly underneath the rain that I was his beautiful, strong creation. Eventually, he had to stop working and needed to sleep, as I would come to learn all humans succumb to eventually, and so the nightly ritual of him strapping me down to a table in the cold, freezing dark while he went back into his warm home began. A few months after my creation, I would come to be allowed in the house. I helped the creator, whose real name was Dr. Crowley, with his day-to-day task in the workshop, which inevitably led to me being needed in the house one day. Creator lived alone in this big, twisting house. There were many interesting things in his house that were much more than the things in his workshop. I noticed tons of things that I saw him work on, or he would have had me move, now moving and doing stuff on its own in his house. I saw a box that made small fire come out of it. Creator ate stuff out of that small box. There was another thing that he would place a bowl or cup into its mouth, and shortly afterwards it would spit water into the cup and the creator would drink it. He had many whittling and clicking devices in his house, but the strangest of which was the one that did not move at all, but rather sat affixed to the wall in the hall to the creator's bedroom. I had first encountered it while I was walking with the creator when suddenly, to the right of me, I saw movement, and my eyes quickly trained on the creator who was now standing next to some stranger. I screamed and pulled my creator away from the creator. But as my eyes darted to his, he did not seem scared, but rather the opposite. He was smiling, and both him and his body double were pointing at me. No, my creator was pointing at the stranger. Then he said something that altered the way I viewed the world. Up until that point, the only other human, besides myself, I had seen was him. So I did not know what to think of it. Its body was covered by a dress to give it some form of modesty. but the soiled clothing did nothing to hide the multicolored flesh underneath. All over black leather stitches held it together. I glanced down and noticed them covering my own body. Had they always been there? Surely, because when I noticed them on the stranger, I noticed them all over me. Its face was not complete and whole like the creator's. No, it had jagged red lines separating its face into three. Stitches stretched from its lips, holding its lower jaw into place. Another line stretched from deep within its hair to the center of its lips, connecting two drastically different faces. It then raised a trembling arm, at the same time as I did. Hesitantly, our fingers met. Then, Creator whispered next to me, the true nature of the monster in the mirror. Something shattered in me, and while at the time I did not have the words to express it, nor do I really think I know why I screamed and broke the reflecting surface. The illusion shattered, but not just the one on the wall. The illusion that I was the same as my beloved creator was shattered. I was just a monster, false life bound and given to this disgusting and rotting quilt of flesh. But that isn't what bothered me. When I saw its... no, my. When I saw my eyes, I understood I was alive. And so I screamed and thrashed until Creator had to use the fire stick and calm me down. When I said this to my friend, she said this was existentialism, and that this very well meant I was alive. She is my only other friend, a cow girl I met while traveling through the barren wastelands south of Creator's home. She never treated me badly and was always kind and patient to me. She even taught me how to speak. But that was long after the neglect and abuse I would come to endure under the Creator. You see, at the time I was just becoming aware that I was alive inside that rotting flesh, and that my Creator was controlling me. It would be many months later until the thought completely formed in my head, or at least until I acted because of it. For the next 2 years after that incident, the Creator outwardly treated me no differently. So that meant I was roaming the grounds of his workshop occasionally, being let into the house in order to assist with some form of manual labor. Over the course of that time, I tried hard to learn to communicate with my Creator, but he seemed to only want to teach me simple words and phrases, stunting my knowledge. And, of course, every night he made sure to strap me to my stone bed. But I noticed that soon, he was retiring from his work for the day earlier, and strapping me down for longer. My frustration grew, spending more than half my life not moving, just thinking. I asked my Creator this one morning, or rather I tried. The words came out as a gurgle from my lips, but unmistakably the three words I said were, "Why? No. Go," while pointing to the house. I think this shocked the Creator. Maybe he did not think I could form questions and ideas. Either way, he hesitantly told me that he was dealing with some issues from the people out of town. He told me not to worry about it and patted me on my shoulder. But that night, while I was chained to the table, I heard voices shouting in the distance. I could tell the voices were angry, but I had no idea at what, though. Eventually, the shouting died away, and all I could hear was the howling of wind outside. Then, after a short time, I heard the crunching of Creator's footsteps in the snow. He came and unchained me. Water was coming out of his eyes again, but he said nothing. He led me over to a large metal plate that was sitting on the floor. After he pulled a few levers on this tiny metal box, the metal plate started hissing, and the floor beneath us began to lower. We were in what he called his basement, a space he had never shown me before. I understood why. I was horrified as I looked around the basement. Many body parts hung from metal hooks. There were giant cases of liquid holding bodies that looked like tiny humans. But many of the tiny humans were misshapen or pieced together like I was. I saw lying in piles assorted limbs and body parts organized in some way. Where did all of those come from? I thought. So I screamed, "Why?" at the creator. But he was prepared and had already clipped my chains to a large metal pillar in the center of the room. As I groaned out the only question I could, a one-worded plea, he kissed my forehead and said the last command he would ever say to me. "My beautiful, strong creation, you will not be the last. Stay here until I return." He then walked away from me, back onto the metal plate that would take him away from me forever. I was left alone in darkness with the faces of my lifeless brothers and sisters watching me for 3 whole days, until I heard shouting from up above. I heard many voices and screams. I started pulling at the chains, adding to the chaos with my own shouts and screams. But the chains did not budge, and above me, the screams grew louder as a loud thundering crash shook dirt onto me. I sat there pulling on the chains that held me, feeling the shackles digging into my wrist. And then all in one moment, the chains that bound me to that spot, and the chains that bound me to my creator, snapped. I ran forward and slammed my fist into the button I watched creator use to call the metal plate. But before it was even a foot in its descent, I was already dangling from it and trying to climb out of the hole. Everything that happened, I think, happened on pure instinct. I know I was not compelled to do what I did by my creator, nor by any of the other men or women that were there that night. I did everything of my own chaotic free will. My master's workshop was no longer recognizable. The roof had already started caving in, pieces of lumber crashing down into a roaring inferno. Dozens of men and women were running around carrying torches and weapons. Most of their weapons were crude and made out of farming equipment, but some of the dwarves carried war hammers that they were using to break apart my creator's inventions. The first person to notice me rise out of the basement screamed and fled in terror, but his shouts and echoes of "Monster!" pierced through the chanting of the mob outside. All around me, though, hot flames were licking at my skin, and I had to get out of the inferno. Outside, a large crowd surrounded the still-burning remains of the workshop, preventing me from running further. I shouted at my creator, shouting his name in my crude tongue while pushing my way through the crowd, blocking the path to his house. But the crowd pushed me back with their pitchforks and their shovels. One man, I think, even slashed at my neck. I only saw a blur of metal and felt the impact against me like a thud. Then I saw the same thing with a pitchfork. They successfully used it to push me back towards the burning building, but they did not puncture my skin. It wasn't until something bathed in light came whirling from the center of the crowd and struck me across the skull had I been actually hurt. Immediately, my vision burst into flames. I screamed and started frantically clawing at my face, and this sent the group in a frenzy. They started hacking at me wildly, a few of their weapons actually cutting away chunks of my flesh. I screamed out in very real pain. I had no other way. I ran back into the flaming workshop, away from the mob. Hopefully they found many bodies that would have died in that fire and thought one of them were mine, and that I did not escape that day. But I did. I ran for so long through the cold and the snow, through the rain and on the ice. I ran. I did not need to eat. I did not need to sleep. I just kept running until I felt safe. It was out there while running through the icy northern countryside that I ran into my best friend, Sakura, the cowgirl. She taught me everything and gave me shelter. She became something Creator never was. She became my mother. Since then, I still live in a solitude of life. I know I am still hideous, and most people still treat me like a monster. The monster roaming through the cold tundra. But you... you don't think I'm a monster. So for you, DayZ, and for you, Nico, That is my story. End of story. And sitting here at the end of it is just a note from Daisy that reads, "Don't let Nico tell you what a monster is." Okay, like I said, I wasn't prepared for that one. This week's entry was supposed to be about the story Nico wanted to use, the Crawling Claw. I know there's a lot to unpack there, but I guess we'll be saving it for next week's Festival of the Dead entry. So, because of that, this portion was hastily put together by both me and Cadwin in the last hour. A lot of it has been pulled from the other golem statements, because it seems that the story that Maple gave us is the only record of a flesh golem in this castle. The flesh golem. Physiology. The flesh golem is a construct usually made from flesh and limbs of multiple other organisms. This is done by magically binding the soul and will of an element to the material plane. I far from understand it, but Nico tried explaining that the elemental plane is just a bunch of living and moving energy. Yes, there are elementals and creatures that live there, but ultimately their world consists of living energy. Golems are the results of arcane users capturing that energy and binding it to their will. Nico said that it's been done numerous times before, but that usually flesh isn't the best conduit for making a golem. But, because they are man-made, they can vary drastically in appearance and, truthfully, only stop at the imagination of their creators. But, generally speaking, they are very strong and hardy monsters, typically lacking in little to no intelligence and are made to look humanoid in shape. Weaknesses and resistances. As Maple noticed, the magic that causes the binding makes it so that the creature cannot be harmed by non-magical attacks. Nor does it need to sleep or eat. It does not need the same bodily function as we do, and thus it cannot be stopped like a normal person could be, despite its flesh once being alive and human. It's been observed that the flesh golem is completely immune to being poisoned, paralyzed, petrified. Hell, you can't charm or even frighten them. Most flesh golems don't achieve the level of enlightenment that Maple did. But it doesn't stop there. Because their existence relies on an element being bound to a husk, they tend to be completely immune or even healed by attacks from that element. In the case of a flesh golem, it seems that a lightning element is always called into the husk. This also means that any attempt to change its physical form from an arcane spell like Polymorph will fail, as the elemental spirit will refuse to be reshaped and altered. And, like all golems constructed by arcane means, it is naturally resistant to magical effects, and the attacks from it count as arcane as well. Attacks. Because the flesh golem doesn't have the mental capacity to formulate plans and use weapons, a lot of the time it typically just uses its inhuman strength to beat its victims to death. Now, one thing I wanted to add personally, but I need to do more research on, because unlike a lot of the other golems, the flesh golem has a tendency to try and break free from its master's bindings. I've called this going berserk. It seems that whenever the golem goes berserk, only its controller can attempt to bring it back under control. I don't deal with the construction of golems, but something has to be there. Maybe it's because their once-alive flesh helps the energy trapped inside realize its existence on the material plane. I have no idea. I'm not a scientist or anything. I just read books, okay?
If you enjoyed today's episode, please share it with your friends and family. Follow us on Twitter at monstersof_ for all news and teasers for upcoming episodes. Thank you for listening to this week's Halloween-themed story, this one reimagining Dr. Frankenstein's monster. Today's story was written to explore the ethical and dark side of Dungeons & Dragons. I like to give my players moral conundrums that could only exist in a world where magic is real. Join us next week with the tiny undead known as the Crawling Hand. Thank you for listening. Until next time.